Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Actor Brendan Gleeson is with us now. Good morning, Brendan.
Morning, Claire. How are you?
I'm very well, and it's lovely to talk to you. We're going to chat all about the hospice services, but we've been talking all morning about Nell McCafferty, people sharing their memories of her and her legacy. Did you know Nell at all?
Not really. I met her once, and she cut the legs from underneath me. The first thing she said to me, and she said, "I suppose you're somebody. You're pretending to be something you're not, or something." And I kind of got a shock, and I glared at her basically, and I said, "I'm not going to defend myself to this." But I met her afterwards. She said, "You know, I think you're great, by the way." I said, "I think you're great too."
And all was well.
And all was well. It was suddenly, but she, you know, she was just such a force, wasn't she? Like, I mean, and hilarious. Like, you know, there was a kind of a joy to her for all the ferocity. That was, yeah, over the years. Like, it's been so long. Like, what a contribution she's made. And interesting, just listening to, you know, people talking about the support she gave them. There was a feeling, as I suppose, that I was slightly on the other side of the fence, even though I wasn't really. That had to be overcome, I guess, in the initial things with her, where she had to kind of test your mettle first, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but I didn't know her well enough. Obviously, that's the feel I'm left with. I didn't know her well enough.
Yes, but you got the sharp word, and she got the Brendan Gleeson glare. So we like the sound of that moment.
It was all going on for a while. Yeah. I know. She did have she had a lovely, lovely manner. Like, we did laugh about it afterwards. It was great.
Listen, you're supporting once again the Bewley's Big Coffee Morning for Hospice, and I'm just fascinated by how long you've been involved in this project, because people might know that both your parents received care in St Francis Hospice in Dublin, but that's a while ago now. But you're still there, you're still sticking with them, and I suppose it tells us how important you view the hospice service.
Yeah, it's kind of a beacon for me in terms of just the way things should be done. You know, I've been talking about this morning, trying to promote the coffee morning, and it's, you know, it's just a great excuse for people to get together. And we were all given out in COVID that we couldn't come together, and this is a great excuse just to get a bunch of people, and you get a bunch of free coffee, and people just put in what they can into the thing. It's very much a feel-good type of promotion, I think. But the hospice itself, it kind of epitomizes to me the way we should be looking at things as against the way we are. You know, it's dealing with death at its most stark, really.
Mm-hmm.
And everything about it has to be, like, if you're box ticking and you're trying to box tick compassion and sensitivity and understanding and professionalism, they're kind of immeasurable qualities that you can't really give, you know, data figures on, but they're the critical thing. They're what are essential. And all of the effort in the hospice is to create an environment in which all of those things can happen at a time that is possibly the most difficult for in you know, in many people's lives, where they're saying goodbye to loved ones or facing their own mortality. These people are so professional, but also so kind, so compassionate. And a lot of people are employed. You know, there's an overmanning thing happens where they make people volunteer. There are plenty of people to make sure that people have the time to, you know, just kind of take on board what's happening and see it through in as gentle a way as possible. So it's kind of life-affirming for me to be a part of even just the people who are involved.
It's one of those things, isn't it, that it's not until it visits your door that you realise how important hospice is. And I don't think I got it until my father died in 2021. And where I'm from in the Midlands, we don't have any hospice. And that's been worked on. And I'm involved in the charity there, so I should declare that. They tell us it's coming, but we're still waiting for it. But
I know it'll happen. It'll happen.
I hope so. They've promised the funding, but that was 2 years ago now. But
Keep going. It's happening everywhere. It is. And I think, as you said, say, like, it's something that people try to push to the back of their minds, and it's understandable. You can't embrace death every day just for the hell of it. It's only really when it comes at, and you have little choice but to face it.
That's it.
But when you see how the humanity of the hospice movement elevates everything about that whole thing, I mean, it does frame your life. It frames, you know, the transience of life is framed by death, and it has to be a part of just the natural order of things. Mm-hmm. Even when it's awful and at odd times. And I don't think there's any bigger contribution. I certainly didn't feel it from my own point of view. I just felt I'd been given a huge gift by these people. And so, yeah, I love it. And I do think, keep going, Claire, you'll get there, I swear.
Well, listen, as I say, you only realise the importance of it then and the beauty that it brings to that experience and how important it is to be able to say to people, you don't have to end your life in an acute hospital. Because if we're honest, that's not where people want to be, but it's where most people end up, unfortunately, because of a lack of hospice services in many cases.
Exactly. And like the thing about the hospice is, at one time it was all based on where if you could get into the hospice, then, you know, things happen. But there's so much more now, more effort goes into the home care thing, and people are going into each other, into people's houses and allowing the thing, trying to negotiate through. Now, they can't solve all problems, mm-hmm. but it just, the outreach is huge now. And like St. Francis is trying to, like, we're in Raheny, they're looking to build a new extension with 24 units, where they're trying to take away some of the, you know, the 4-bed units and turn them into singles. And then there's a hugely expanding population in North Dublin. And they're trying to cater for that and get ahead of the curve. So it's like, it's one of those areas again where there's actual planning involved in seeing what's happening, seeing the increase and trying to cater for it.
Yeah,
you know, it's invigorating.
The single room is so important, isn't it? Because you want to be able to have a good chat and not think that people are listening to you. Not that anyone really cares what you're saying, but you're less inhibited, of course, aren't you, when you're in a single room?
Absolutely. And like, I wouldn't crib about anything that happened with my folks, but my mum was in a single room, and that was that. And then, you know, 2 years later, whatever, I was 2.5 years later, my dad, 3 years later, my dad was, but and for a while, my dad was longer in the hospice. So at times there were 4 beds in the place, and it's just, you don't want to be earwigging on other people. You had to speak quite loudly because you didn't hear very well. You're trying to, you know, they're intimate conversations. So it was nobody's, some people don't care, as you say. For me, I did find it inhibiting. So hopefully it's just another way. Everything that the hospice does in regards to trying to get people that ability to talk to each other in single rooms, to have the environs of the hospice itself, you know, the little pieces of garden, the little places where you can sort of find just to get small moments. All of these things are at the pinnacle. They're at the top. They're not add-ons we must put in a garden or something. They create the environment for these lovely communicative moments to happen, sensitive times when, you know, you're getting through that awful time. So it's it's the priorities that are in the hospice, I think, are kind of a lesson to me for all life, really.
Yeah, all life. And, you know, the things that they do, because I remember having a little tour around St. Francis in Raheny, the hospice there.
Yeah.
And the explanation about, you know, if you want to bring your dog in and have the dog sit on the bed with you, that's fine.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There was a really sad story I heard about a young mother who was at end of life, and she was allowed to bring her child in and to bath her child. I mean, it catches me even when I think about it today, but whatever you want, whatever makes your end of life journey easier, if they can facilitate it, they will.
Absolutely. I remember my dad was with us for a while, and my wife, diabetes was one of the many things that were happening, and she was trying to limit him to 2 Maltesers a day.
No
and
luck.
She was being told to, like, no, but she was being told, because he was in a wheelchair, that he was taking oxygen. It was all like that. But when he went into the hospice, we went in one day and there were these mounds of ice cream in front of him, where he was completely getting, you know, they don't sweat the small stuff. You know, they understand where it's going. The person understands where it's going, and it's just everything. A lot of the time I'd go in and I could hear them laughing behind the screens with the nurses.
Oh, lovely.
It's just, I mean, I don't know. It's immeasurable, as I say. So yeah, if you want to get out and have a good time, go get just ask for the kit from the coffee morning, because it is a good excuse to kind of chin wag and get on with people. You know, maybe in some of the type of WhatsApp groups that you haven't really met in person for a while, because I really do think everybody who gets involved in it seems to feel enriched by it. You know,
it's a great thing to do, and you're right. The event itself, coming together for the coffee and the cake, it's great fun. And Bewley's Big Coffee Mornings, so people just do a search there and they can find out how to sign up for it, because we do the after the death bit really well in this country. I'm not sure we're as comfortable yet with thinking about the bit that leads up to that, but if you do get involved in the coffee morning, you will start, I think, to think about it, and you never know when you might need the service yourself, and you might start having conversations about how you would like the end of life to look, and if, you never know what it might breed for you.
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely. Yeah, no.
Now, let's talk about what you're up to, because you've a very big movie coming out, don't you, in the autumn?
Yeah, I had a bit to do in Joker, Folie à Deux, which is coming out in October, which is a follow-up to the one that won Joaquin Phoenix the Oscar.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to be a part of it. You know, I wouldn't say I'm exactly the star of the show, but I just was so pleased to get the call to actually to be a part of that setup, because the first film completely blew me away. I don't think there are very few performances that have affected me to the same extent as Joaquin's in the first film. I remember being unable to speak for about 15 minutes afterwards.
Really?
And it's just, the depth of it was. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. And I watched the trailer last night for the new movie, because I knew we were having our chat today. And it looks very dark. Like, it looks creepy. And those things, I'm not good, Brendan. I'm not good. Like, Banshees of Inisherin, great, you know? Nice sunlit vistas. Everyone lives.
I lost all my digits. What are you talking about? Nice sunlit vistas.
It looked nice. It didn't frighten me. The Joker, don't know. I watched it because you're in it, of course.
Honestly, no, I don't know if that's a great idea, but I just. I haven't seen ours yet. I can't wait to see it. I heard that it is of similar ilk, but the first one, the complexity of the performance of Joaquin Phoenix, and the whole film really was made to accommodate it. The first one, honestly, it's not just, you know, it's not just the kind of whatever, those type of an event movie. It's an actual sort of exploration of a type of unbalanced behavior that I know you're not a great woman for this kind of thing, but for me, it was extraordinary, honestly, creatively extraordinary.
And is that how you pick the work now, that you see something has to draw you in?
Yeah, if I'm lucky, I especially since the last couple of years, I kind of last the Banshees sort of circusy thing, and I was doing Joker at the same time over in LA. And it kind of wore me out a bit. I was absolutely wasted at the end of it, because there was all the Oscar stuff that was going on, and then the publicity for Banshees had happened, and then I was trying to make a film at the same time. Mm-hmm. It was one of those things that I said, okay, from now on, I have to start I was always kind of fairly discerning in terms of what I never wanted to do something I didn't believe in.
Yes.
But there was a tendency to say, you know what, if we do this right, we could maybe make this out of it. Whereas now I'm kind of feeling that really, unless something grabs me by the throat and said, this is undeniable, I don't want to do all the travel and all the messing around and, you know, I don't feel the need to go back to back with everything anymore, which I kind of did in earlier years. I wanted to stay active all the time. So yeah, I'm a bit more choosy. What can I tell you?
good. We like to hear that, because I was looking at the speculation as well around the Spider-Man noir series. I just read something that said, it seems like it's all systems go. Our very own Brendan Gleeson has reportedly joined the cast. Can you tell us whether that is the case?
It is the case, and it's Nicolas Cage is a 50-year-old Spider-Man, you know. I mean, come on, it's like, you know, You know, he's feeling a bit bruised and beaten up, and he's a private eye now. And I've never worked with Nicolas Cage, so this would be
fun.
So yeah, it will be fun, and it's kind of Amazon TV thing. So it's over a couple of episodes, and to be honest with you, I'm still kind of getting through the action. I haven't seen the full thing from start to finish yet, in terms of even the scripts. But yeah, it'll be going back into noir, which is going to be fascinating. You know, it's 1933. You know, he's a private eye. I just think it's going to be an awful lot of fun, because even technically, it'll be kind of black and white, plus this, I presume, hyper-saturated kind of super parody stuff that'll be happening at the same time. So it's kind of, it's just a world of, that noir thing. I always wanted to tip the cap and do my Edward G. Robinson.
Well, we saw what Andrew Scott did with Ripley on Netflix this year in black and white, and look how powerful that was. Amazing.
Oh, it's extraordinary. Well, the first time I did black and white was The General, and that's going back a long time.
Sure is.
And yeah, and even the technology has changed. Like, John shot in color stock because they wanted it in TV in America, wouldn't want to just have a color version. But when he gave him the color version, it was completely desaturated. So it was very interesting, actually. Mm-hmm. Very light pastel sort of a color washed out. Whereas this is going to be kind of toying with the opposite. And the director of the first two episodes is Harry Bradbeer, who did Fleabag. And I don't know if you saw Fleabag.
Yes, I did. Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant stuff.
Which I thought it was amazing. Yeah. So I was chatting to him and I said, Fleabag, what I remember of it was the bravery and the mischief and so much more, you know.
And it wasn't Brendan, wasn't it?
No, well, Phoebe scared the hell out of me. Every time she looked down the camera, I was...
Well, my son was watching Spider-Man last night, and he's only 11. And I said, oh, do you think that might be a bit scary for you? And he just looked at me and said, it's Spider-Man. So I need to get over myself, don't I?
Yeah, you do. It'll draw you into its web, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, I have loads of people here texting us asking when the coffee morning is. And don't worry, I have the date. It's the 26th of September. So there's loads of time for people to sign up. And I have a number here as well, which I'll give out in a minute. But Brendan, I know you need to go, and we're delighted to get your time, and it's lovely to talk to you as always, and the best of luck with all the projects.
I love to talk to you, Claire. Yeah, and the best of luck with your own project too. We'll be keeping an eye on that.
Thanks so much, Brendan. Brendan Gleeson. Thanks a lot.
Bye.